Hello, everyone. I'm Carrie Ell, and this is Carrie Ell's Heartlink Show. And I'll be the host for the next hour. And we have a great show planned today. I have William Henry here with us. And I'm all excited. And in a minute, we will go to him. But first, I want you to just allow sacred love to flow through you now. And just take a deep breath and relax. And the blessing of the day comes from the Gayatri Prayer. Let us focus on that effulgent light from which the whole universe is protected. May this inner sun enlighten our minds and hearts. And may we awaken as that light. And I am just so excited about today's show. I want to give you the phone numbers to call. And, of course, I'm assuming that you're on a computer anyway, and you probably see the numbers right there. But for the U.S., it's toll-free at 877-876-5227. Canada is 888-815-9756. And the international is 530-876-3222. And we'll be taking your calls at the bottom of the hour. So I just want to remind everyone to go to my website, heartlinkinstitute.com, and find out what's happening. And I have lots of articles on the ascension process. And wonderful information, and now a new online course, or several courses actually, in the esoteric sciences using streaming video. So I'm very pleased to announce that. So that's heartlinkinstitute.com. And also check out the Crop Circle Cards, the Living Oracle, which is a wonderful device to contact your divine self. And I, with the help of the Syrians, I created that back in the early 90s using the crop circle glyphs that appear in the fields over the years. So I'm excited now to introduce my guest. And William and I met, very briefly, and I don't even know if he remembers, back in the 90s at the UFO Congress. And I just was so impressed with his ability to connect the dots and synthesize information that I kind of knew about, and he just made things so clear for me. So he is one of the foremost authors in investigative mythology, and he's created a whole new field. So with that, and of course, William, you've written over 14 books and numerous DVDs now. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself? Welcome to our show.
Oh, thank you, Carrie. It's very nice to talk with you.
And tell us about, you know what, I am so pleased that I was able to watch your DVDs, Star Walkers, and The Dimension of the Blessed, as well as The Light Body Effect.
Oh, great. Yeah, thank you for watching those.
Well, you know what, I not only watched them once, but several times, and I'm telling you, there's so much information. And the pictures are just glorious, and so I would fall asleep at night, kind of with these images in my mind, and just have the greatest dreams.
Actually, that's great. Yeah, so, I work real hard on collecting various the best sacred art that I can find that kind of displays this whole process that we're all undergoing right now of transforming ourselves into the highest possible beings we can become.
Well, and I'm so glad that we're on the same page with that, because that's, I think, exactly why we've come here to do that. And The ascension process is definitely underway, and many are commenting on situations that they're finding is helping to catapult them, whether they want to or not, into refining and purifying and so forth for the light body. Would you please tell us what the Starwalker is? What is that all about?
It all comes from ancient Egypt for me, and the story of Osiris. You have these incredible images of Isis literally beaming energy to Osiris, who is the Egyptian god of resurrection. And in many scenes, like at the Temple of Love and Joy at Dendera, you have Isis standing on top of Osiris, who's laid out in his holy shroud above his ship of eternity. And what was so amazing to me is two things about this scene. First, that when Osiris is portrayed in his tight-fitting holy shroud, the name of that shroud that the Egyptians gave to it was Krast. It's spelled K-R-A-S-T. And I like to joke that that's how we pronounce Christ here in Tennessee, where I live. People go to the Church of Krast. And little do they know, but they're using an ancient Egyptian term for the light body of Osiris, an energy body that was literally beamed to him through like a Reiki sort of process by Isis. And the second thing about the scene is that the ship of eternity that the Egyptians portrayed Osiris upon perfectly matches the way modern science portrays a wormhole or a stargate. And what I started to piece together was this understanding that what Isis was doing is preparing Osiris so that he could become a being that could walk through the stargates and wormholes that permeate the known universe. And as a matter of fact, I was taking off on the work of a mathematician and Egyptologist named Dr. Charles Muses, who died in around 2002, I think it was. And Dr. Muses believed that the Egyptians had an as-yet-undiscovered technology in which they used lights, tones, and various plants to awaken a hormone within us that would create this new non-molecular skin. And what Dr. Muses had shown was that, for example, on the case in which Tutankhamun's mummy was found, they portray Osiris in his tight-fitting holy shroud, his Christ or crossed body, and the inscriptions that go along with it, they show a star with three beams of light going into Osiris's third eye, and then right in front of him is the Egyptian hieroglyph or determinative for walking. And what Muses pointed out is that the hieroglyph for star is the same as the glyph for door. And he came up with this notion or this interpretation of the hieroglyphs that said that this is portraying Osiris as walking through a star door, what we today call a star gate, or it portrays him as a star walker. And in many of the Egyptian stories, especially those recorded in the Book of Gates and the Book of Coming Forth by Day, they talk about how they were preparing themselves for life and what they referred to as the field or the dimension of the blessed. And so that became the title of my book, Starwalkers and the Dimension of the Blessed. And what I did is looked at the Egyptian beliefs in how we become starwalkers and enter this dimension of the blessed and linked it together with modern science as well as other civilizations such as the Sumerians and just kind of ganged them all together and started piecing together this story, this long-forgotten story of this potential within each and every one of us.
Well, and so beautifully done, again, that made such clarity to my knowledge of symbols. I think many of us respond to symbols, if not all of us, and you just have taken, that to the nth level of, putting them together. And like you say, you've used the Egyptians as well as other religions. I'm impressed with how they all seem to have similar information about this light body of ours. And what others can you tell us about?
Well, of course, there's the Christian tradition of the transfiguration of Jesus when he takes the disciples up to the mountain and reveals himself as a being of light. And then it tells them that this is a secret, that this is information that is not to be revealed until the end times when the Son of Man is risen, which is thought of as the end times, which many people believe we're actually in right now, where we're experiencing the end of a calendar age. And so what I found in my research on the early Christian mysteries is that Jesus and the disciples, the people we think of as Jesus and the disciples, were tremendous esoteric researchers. They had been spending time in the temples of Iran, Iraq, of Egypt, of India, Tibet, Mongolia, trying to assimilate all of this knowledge about how to affect the light body transformation, or what I simply refer to as the light body effect, where they essentially will shift the vibration of their body, accelerate the vibration of their body, and basically, as I understand it now, they open up a wormhole. And it's kind of it's worth noting how I started to kind of get into that direction. I was at a conference one weekend, and a really nice couple came up to me in their mid-50s or so, and they were very complimentary about the books and the radio interviews that I had done. And then they proceeded to tell me that they both had PhDs from the Harvard Divinity School, and that they had lived in India, they had lived in Tibet, and they translate a lot of the Tibetan texts. And they told me that I was able to answer for them something that the Tibetans would not answer to them, because the Tibetans claimed it was totally secret. And that is, they told me about these lamas who would perform what they call the great perfection, again, where they accelerate the vibration of their body and transmute their body into a vortex of light. And then the Tibetans would just kind of leave people hanging. They wouldn't tell the initiates what happened to them after they transmute their body into this vortex. And this couple said that after reading my books and watching the DVDs, it became perfectly clear to them that what was happening is that these lamas were opening wormholes with their bodies and traveling the stars as star walkers.
Wow. And finding that they could go anywhere they want to go?
Exactly. The Tibetans, they told me, talk in terms of, have direct knowledge, intimate knowledge of 28 different solar systems. And how they traveled there was something that was not answered, but now they feel like they've got a good clue. They're opening up wormholes, or traveling in the wormholes that permeate the galaxy ever since the time of the Big Bang.
Well, you know, I love, the pictures that you had in your demonstration in the Star Walkers. And I wonder, as well as the body of light effect, those two DVDs, why don't you share with us how people can contact you if they wanted to, as well as get information
on
your website?
Oh, great. Yeah, they can go to my website, which is williamhenry.net, williamhenry.net, and I've got information about the DVDs on the front page.
Excellent, excellent. You are such a prolific writer. I mean, do you ever find time to sleep? or maybe it's just coming out of your sleep.
I don't know.
In your sleep.
I just kind of, a number of years ago, reached sort of a critical mass in my research, where all of a sudden it's like, wow, it's like a gold field where there's nuggets all around you, and I can't gather them up fast enough.
So do you feel you're being, this is like a spiritual guide that you got helping you out, and that you...
I can't say that for sure, Carrie. I'm not really a seer, a feeler, or an experiencer, although that's starting to shift just a little bit. So people will say to me, oh, you're channeling. And I say, well, I don't really feel like I'm channeling, because everything that all the information in the books, all the data is sourced, and it's footnoted. And you can go follow the trail yourself. And they're like, no, you must be guided somewhere. Someone's got to be helping you put these pieces together, connect the dots. And I can't put a name to it or anything, but if people want to feel that way, that's okay by me, because what's important is the information itself and what people can actually do with it. I mean, I've always perceived myself as providing the service that I provide for people is, I love reading books. I love focusing and putting together this information in a way that people can then go follow the trail themselves. So that's how I see myself.
I guess my question is, are you on a spiritual path, spiritual discipline of some kind that has helped you with this?
No. No, in fact, my Indian name is Skipping Rock. I'm like the rock skipping across the pond. The object is to get across to the other side without sinking in any particular discipline or belief system.
I see. Okay. All right. Now, so, but do you meditate?
No.
So you're teaching meditation in a way or at least guiding us with these images of Tibetan lamas
yes.
their wonderful rainbow bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And how interesting.
What I've found is that the power of those images goes beyond merely their artistic beauty, their aesthetic beauty. That when we're looking at this artwork that I've collected, and I've only learned this within the past year or so, the tremendous magical effect that it has on people. I mean, I always know it inspires me, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so I know how I feel when I come upon an ancient Sumerian cylinder seal that shows a light being or a god with rays of light coming off his body stepping through this gateway, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I get excited about that when I turn the page. And then recently I started thinking about how that must feel for a person to come upon my work cold, having no awareness of some of the work I do before, and all of a sudden have 500 of those images put forth before you in a matter of a few hours.
I think it's a perfect way, really, to cycle up with the energies without having to have done so much of the painful work that many of us have done.
That's exactly right. And see, so I started researching the icons. The Eastern Orthodox Church was the primary promoter of icons, and they had an incredible belief system that was attached to these icons. They believed that the icons were literally two-way mirrors or channels of communication. And so when you're looking at an Orthodox image of the Transfiguration of Jesus, again, where he's got the disciples up on the mountain, and Jesus is portrayed in a radiant body of light, signifying his light body. He's got an open gateway behind him in almost all of these transfiguration images. What we are asked to believe, or what we're asked to do when we're looking at such images, according to the icon tradition, is to access a level of mind, a level of devotion, where mentally, physically, spiritually, and emotionally, you experience the same thing, the same energies and emotions that Jesus was experiencing in his transfiguration. And this is how they transmitted the secret of the transfiguration. This comes from Tibet. I mean, even the Dalai Lama has said recently in articles I've read about the rainbow body images coming from Tibet, is that simply seeing these images can have a transformative effect on you. And this is how they transmitted these secrets. There are no written texts in Tibet or in the Christian tradition for how a person can affect the transfiguration. The secrets were always transmitted orally and in symbols and pictures.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And this is why it became such a bone of contention among the iconoclasts when Islam came along. Islam said to Christianity, y'all are nothing but a bunch of hillbillies worshiping images of these figures in their light bodies and transfiguration images. They said that's idolatry. And it so happened that a Byzantine emperor named Emperor Leo III sided with Islam and actually began to ban these images. And this is why we see more and more images from that point forward, 600 AD, we see more and more images of the suffering Jesus on the cross than we do images of the transfigured Jesus in his light body. One is an image of cruelty and suffering. The other is an image of absolute love and compassion. And part of what I'm on now is a crusade of sorts to get people to go to my site, go to my Transfiguration Gallery, download the image of Jesus in his transfigured light body form, and understand that those images in and of themselves are like software for the soul.
Well, and I have done that, William, and your website again is williamhenry.net.
Mm-hmm.
And I am here to tell you, I have plastered all those pictures all over my bedroom wall. And I, like I say, when I fall off to sleep, I mean, that's exactly what I'm witnessing, and it's so inspirational. And I absolutely agree with you that we have been disempowered by the religious institutions.
And their symbols.
And unfortunately, the symbols are fear-based.
They're totally fear-based. And what modern neuroscience now knows is that if you're saturated with that imagery, it's going to weaken your immune system and disempower you. Whereas the transfiguration images, the light body images, are designed to empower you and to act as a target, because our bodies already know how to do this. What we need is the software to activate it.
And literally, something gets tripped off in our biology. Our DNA just laps it up.
That's right.
It's amazing. I really do get the sense that we are changing like this into from this larva state into the butterfly state.
Yes.
I love that imagery that you gave. Why don't you tell us how that works?
Well, it goes back to the images of Osiris where they show him literally in a pupil form. And I love that word pupil because you can spell it P-U-P-I-L, and it refers to a student or an initiate or the pupil of the eye. Or phonetically, you can also spell it pupil, P-U-P-A-L. And now this refers to the larval form of the butterfly. And that's essentially the condition that all of us are in. We're in a larval form. We're in pupil form attempting to become masters, to master the craft. And we know we've become masters when we enter into our light body form, which is symbolized by the butterfly, which is the symbol of rebirth, renewal, and resurrection.
And you did so beautifully, again, in your Starwalker DVD, you quoted Terrence McKenna,
mm-hmm.
and something to the effect that our mission here on Earth is our life must be a preparation for transition from this life into another dimension.
That's right.
How beautiful.
I know. I mean, that is like the keynote phrase, isn't it? Because that's why we are here. And in fact, another of the words that I like to use is the word perfect. We're here throughout the myth and scripture, the Bible and Tibet, elsewhere, you very frequently come across this word, the perfect ones or the great perfection. The Cathars in southern France called themselves the pure ones, and their highest elect were called the perfecti. When a human being is perfected, it doesn't have anything to do with Hollywood's image of a perfect person, a perfect man, or a perfect woman. Perfection meant a pure heart, a state of lightheartedness. And that is the key to entering into these other dimensions. As in the example of the Egyptian weighing of the heart ceremony, they show how the initiate's heart is weighed against the feather of cosmic truth called the feather of Maat. And if the heart weighs less than a feather, then the soul is able to go on into the field or dimension of the blessed. If your heart weighs more than the feather, well, they've got a recycling program. We're going to come back and we're going to be a pupil again.
And, oh, no, not again.
Yeah, and that's what it's all about, is the, achieving the state of purity, of lightheartedness, and total love. I mean, even when Jesus was asked about how, by the rich man, about how he can enter the kingdom of heaven, Jesus replied by saying, well, it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to go into the kingdom of heaven. And he responded to the rich man by saying to follow the commandments, which is love the Lord your God with all your heart, your mind, and all your soul, and love your neighbor as yourself. And if people are uncomfortable with the word Lord, you can just simply say love with all your heart, your mind, and soul, and love your neighbor as yourself. Because that is the only way, that is the entire secret right there to affecting the light body transformation. Mm-hmm. We have to be beings of total love and pure love. And then right after that is when Jesus says that the way to perfect yourself is to become a being of pure love. And so today we have this image of perfection that people are chasing by spending thousands of dollars on plastic surgery and mm-hmm. anti-aging formula, and our culture supports the idea of becoming perfect by having a certain body weight and all that sort of thing. But perfection has nothing whatsoever to do with any of that.
Well, and success, too, is all strictly within the first three chakras, which is sex, money, and power.
Yeah, and as
totally
the church lady used to say, could be Satan, you know? I mean, that's who's behind all of this, right? I don't believe in Satan. I'm just making a half joke here, but
yeah.
I do believe that there is a religious and political culture that seeks to keep us, as you're saying, in those lower three chakras, because now we're controllable.
Yes, very controllable. When we get to the heart chakra, they can't control us any longer.
No.
That's really our job, is to get that. And the chakra system is so essential. And again, let's go back to that wonderful Osirian device that you were describing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I saw the pictures, and boy, when you described it, well, go ahead and tell us how it works again.
Well, Carrie, I can't exactly tell you exactly how it works. I can describe for you what I'm investigating with it. That the oldest temple site in Egypt is a place called Abydos, which is the gate to the gods, as they call it. It was a continuous site of pilgrimage for over 3,000 years, and in fact still is. And when you go into that temple, they have a chapel dedicated to Osiris. And on one side of the wall, you have this incredible image of what is known as the Osiris device. And we use the word device because when you look it up in the dictionary, the word device means tool, it means appliance, it also means symbol. And this Osiris device is all three of those things. It is a tool, it is an appliance, and it is a symbol. What is it? What function does it perform as a tool? Well, the Egyptians said that this device was the ladder or stairway to heaven. The components of this device, it shows a platform that is clearly the blueprint or model for the Israelite Ark of the Covenant, which was an energy device and also a communications tool that the Israelites probably learned about while they were in Egypt. But what the Egyptians did is they added a pillar to this device that resembles an antenna, and they called that pillar the Shuti pillar, which means the enlightenment pillar. And as I'm looking at that, I'm studying this image over a period of years, and it strikes me that just as a flash of intuition to superimpose a meditating person over the Osiris pillar, the Osiris device. And what do you know? The first three chakras perfectly matched with the Ark of the Covenant platform, and the higher chakras perfectly corresponded with the spinal cord, with the top of it being the two hemispheres of the human brain. Mm-hmm. And so I'm thinking, okay, what if we start perceiving the human body as this ladder or stairway to heaven, as the Egyptians referred to Osiris? Well, if I finally got to visit the Temple of Abydos personally, and I was just absolutely blown away by what I saw, I finally got to see the actual image of the Osiris device on the wall in color, amazingly beautiful, and then I turned around to see what was on the opposite wall. And what was on the opposite wall was the same device, but now they added a wormhole-shaped ship that was sitting on the Ark of the Covenant platform. And what do you know? Seti, the pharaoh who built the Temple of Abydos, was portrayed, transformed into the pillar.
Which confirms that it is our bodies.
Totally confirms that it is our bodies.
Wow.
And the way I looked at this is that this is a transporter device. This is like a Star Trek transporter device. That's what our body is from the soul's perspective. The alchemists and different traditions talk about our soul as a divine spark, as a seed atom, as a drop of molten gold that has the ability to grow the physical body necessary for incarnation and to utilize that body as a ladder or stairway to heaven and to ultimately de-atomize it or accelerate the atoms of this body, as in the rainbow body of Tibet, and accelerate it and open up a wormhole and travel into other dimensions. It's incredible.
Wow, and you know what? I mean, this whole wormhole thing has got me really focusing on the serpent and what that symbolized in ancient traditions as well. That whole idea that we can manifest an opening somehow, a crack in the universe to travel through. And the current, I don't know if you follow astrology at all, and are familiar with, I don't know if I'm saying this right, Ophiuchus?
Ophiuchus, yeah.
Ophiuchus, mm-hmm. Okay. You are familiar with this 13th constellation of
right.
The so-called zodiac that became hidden, and then only 12 of the zodiac constellations are known about. And it's like, okay, it confirms that there's a way to get off the wheel of 12.
Right.
Through this doorway that we're currently traveling through. Every time we go through this part in space during this holidays between Thanksgiving and Christmas, and we're right in the midst of it now, And so there is a sense of connectedness to the galactic center, in other words, right now, more so than any time, other time of the year, or in general, unless you're, of course, doing your spiritual discipline.
Right.
But now is a time, a perfect time to do this kind of meditating on these symbols and connecting to the energies. And so does that resonate with you? Does that
make sense? Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because one of the key pieces of research that I came upon that really kind of opened this up for me was that the whole idea of the Maya 2012 end date and their belief in what they call a serpent rope.
Mm-hmm.
The Maya describe a great rift in the center of the Milky Way galaxy, which the constellation Ophiuchus is right next to the galactic center.
Mm-hmm.
And they talk about how this great rift opens, and out of this great rift comes a ladder. And from out of the ladder comes what they described as a serpent rope. And riding upon this serpent rope is an enlightened being that they called Nine Winds, who could be actually a group of enlightened beings. And what Maya interpreters have done is taken out the archaic Mayan term serpent rope and inserted the modern term wormhole.
Mm.
And said that what the Mayans are describing is that a wormhole will open from the galactic center, and from out of that will emerge a group of enlightened beings or an enlightened being. Now, that's an incredible thought.
Wow.
Because it's saying, hey, this is how the gods travel. And when you go back to Egypt, Tibet, when you go back to Sumeria, you're constantly seeing gods coming and going through gateways and also riding upon ships that are shaped like serpents or serpent ropes. And I'm thinking, okay, that's the Maya are right on track with this. And whether or not we're looking for a being or a group of beings to come flying through the sun, which is our star door, star tunnel, or stargate, or not, just think about what's happening in our culture right now. What has been the top TV show in the past decade? What are the top movies have been about?
Stargate, GS, whatever.
Right. Stargates,
yeah.
Wormholes.
Yeah.
Our consciousness is shifting to perfectly match what the Maya were describing for this time. And it's incredible to me because it tells us that we really are locking onto this, and it truly is our imagination where a lot of this is the right field where a lot of these stories are being enacted. And even William Blake, I always like to cite William Blake's quote, who said that the eternal body of man is the imagination because God is imagination.
It is true. I mean, we can create, we're powerful creators, and unfortunately, so many of people are sleeping through this and living their worst nightmares. So that's where we got to really get our subconscious under control,
right?
So that we it becomes our greatest dreams.
Yeah.
So
well, it goes back to the commandment, doesn't it? Just love with all your heart, all your mind, and all your soul. Love your neighbor as yourself. Because now we know from the quantum spiritual perspective that our neighbor is ourself.
Well, and the serpent, back to that, just to mention, that represents also that transformation of, you know, the coming out of the skin and the transformational butterfly thing again.
Right. There it is.
So it may not be, you know, I get the sense that we're all becoming Quetzalcoatl. You know, this the feathery
the rainbow serpent or feathered serpent,
yeah. And that we really have that Christ consciousness, and that's the galactic center once again.
Yeah, and I, you know, it just always reminds me. I saw a cartoon once with a caterpillar looking up at a butterfly, saying, "You'll never get me up in one of those things." And that's where most of us are at. We don't believe that this is possible for ourselves. Therefore, it's not.
Yeah, again, the ability to deprogram from the negative stuff that we've been fed and to allow ourselves to have these big dreams. And
yeah. I mean, I remember once I had an interview with a major radio talk show host, and I was talking about the light body, and he finally said to me, "Isn't that dehumanizing?" I'm thinking,
okay, we're becoming a whole new species.
Yeah, it's like, no, this is like the next step. This is where we're meant to go. It's not a backward step. It's a great leap forward.
Yeah, and that is true. Again, I just feel, and the way you said how we need to be really focused on images now, as we live through this lifetime, to really create these glorious images that we then can take with us to the next dimension or create in the next dimension. And, you know, in other words, if we're focused on all these awful things, that's what's going to manifest as we go on to the next dimension.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it's focus, and I use the word obsession. There's I live here in Nashville, Tennessee, and there's a psychologist here named Dr. Mario Martinez who was hired by the Vatican to go around the world studying stigmatics, people that exemplified the marks, the wounds of Jesus on the cross.
Mm-hmm.
And he verified the story of a woman in California who exemplified the stigmata marks after obsessively reading about the crucifixion.
Oh, boy.
Okay? And so if we take that and apply it to the transfiguration, which is the positive, and the resurrection images and the ascension image, which all show Jesus in front of a gateway that has, you're thinking, this is a wormhole. This is how we think of this today, because the imagery perfectly matches the way we portray a wormhole today. And that brings up kind of the pet peeve I have about shows such as Stargate and Wormhole. They're all written from a militaristic point of view.
Yeah.
It's always the military that controls this technology.
Unfortunately, yeah.
Yeah. But in all of the ancient stories, it was always the divine feminine that operated the gates. And the only way that you go through the gate is as a being of love.
As a spiritual being.
As a spiritual being.
That is so true. You know, you really nailed it when you said that, and in that their concern was that as we are becoming more technological, that it, you know, we've got there's a fork in the road.
Mm-hmm.
We're coming to that fork, and needing to make that commitment towards our spiritual lives. And if we miss that, then we who knows
I know.
That.
I mean, it's so remarkable, Carrie-Ell, that when you're looking back at the Egyptians and they're talking about creating this new skin, this light body through which would become our body of immortality, and then you look at today and you see how we literally are creating a new skin for ourselves. I mean, Microsoft owns a patent for using human skin as an electrical device, as an input device for other computers. And you look at the way we're converging all our technologies in our skin, where we're starting to wear our computers, our iPods, and so on and so forth. But where this is all going to go is in the skin.
Becoming Borgs.
Becoming Borgs, right. So, I mean, the fork in the road is not coming up. We're making the turn right now.
Right. We're going to continue this frame of thought in a moment. We'll talk about CERN and so forth in a moment. But I do believe we have a caller who would probably like to ask a question. Is there a caller?
I'm wonderful listening, and a pleasure to hear you again. And I don't know if you remember me. I called you when you were on Dr. Brooks Agnew's show, and we talked about the Stargates and stuff over there in Iraq and the real reason why they went over there.
Right.
Okay. I have a question for you. Actually, I would like your input on this. You know, David Wilcox, the one that a lot have speculated may be the reincarnation of Edgar Casey.
Right.
Over the weekend, I listened to his interviews that they did over there at Camelot. And he talked about this Black Ops gentleman that he ran into who was involved with the Montauk project.
Mm-hmm.
And how one of the extraterrestrial ships, they took out this chair where, you know, they're so much further advanced than we are with technology. And a lot of theirs is mental ability.
Mm-hmm.
And they used these chairs, and they would just envision where they wanted to go in the galaxy, and it took them. The ship took them.
Yeah.
And so they took this chair out, and they hooked it up and started experimenting with it. And, of course, you know probably all that story. But what I found so interesting was that, and once they finally got all the bugs worked out of it, and a lot of people died, but they began to send people through this chair to go different places, and everyone started experiencing the same thing where they would be monitoring where they were going, and all of a sudden this thing would flatline.
Hmm.
And there was like 22 different locations that they could go to.
Huh.
And every time they'd go out in, like, this wormhole, it would flatline for 5 or 6 minutes. And so when they'd get back, they'd go, where did you go? You know, it just went flatline on us. And they'd always say, to the most blissful, wonderful place. Well, when they finally was able to track it down timeline-wise, it was December 21, 2012 is where they hit that flatline.
Wow.
Now, is that interesting or what?
Yeah.
And, caller, what's your first name and where are you calling from?
Oh, this is Gail from Tennessee. I'm sorry, from the Smoky Mountains of Tennessee.
Oh, Tennessee.
Yes.
That's
I used to live in Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I'm not very far away. I'm about 80 miles away. I'd love one of these times to get over to listen to one of your seminars or something, William.
Please
well,
do.
William, why don't you share with us, are you having a seminar coming up?
I've got another Nashville conference coming up April 5th.
Okay. In Nashville?
And I'll have information up on my website in just a couple days about that.
Okay.
All right, Gail, do you have any other question? Or?
No, I just would like for him to comment on what his feeling is and take about this 2012 thing and how this, you know, this really intense thing that they were doing, and it all points to this timeline.
Good question. All right.
I'll take that off the air.
Okay,
thank you.
Well, it's a fantastic story. I mean, I love it. It's certainly hopeful that as we hit 2012 that we're talking about some real bliss coming in. I mean, I all we can do is just start to set our hearts for that kind of a outcome here and get going.
Well, we have the tools, as you've pointed out. We definitely have the chakra system and the ability to connect to the pineal and to manifest incredible energies and anchors them. I mean, we are the anchors for heaven on earth right now. So, boy, people just know that. And
we're literally walking pillars, too, is another way to think about it, based on the Egyptian image of the Osiris device. We're pillars that are beaming the radiant energy coming from our heart, but we're also ladders or stairways for other people so that they, too, can catch a hold and be like Jack climbing the beanstalk.
And before we were starting to speak about the fork in the road, and so that we know not to take the which road, why don't you speak a little bit about CERN, what's happening over in Switzerland right now with the particle accelerator?
Yeah, that's what an amazing project. Near Geneva, they have a particle accelerator facility they call the Center for European Nuclear Research, or CERN. And there they've built the world's largest experiment, which is a 17-mile ring accelerator that they're going to be smashing these protons together in hopes of discovering the secrets of something they call the God particle. The God particle,
okay.
That's right. And once they have these secrets, the secrets of the God particle, they believe they'll be able to explain why matter has mass and all kinds of other amazing things. They're going to be creating baby black holes. And what got me excited about it is back in the 90s, I had written a book called The Peacemaker and the Key of Life. And in this book, I chronicled the appearances of the herald or forerunner of the Christ or Messiah. And in Jewish legend, the herald has a to-do list. He or she has got to go get the Ark of the Covenant, the flask of anointing oil that belonged to Mary Magdalene, the manna, an omer or a measure of the manna that the Israelites were eating in their excursion in the wilderness, and a couple other things, including revealing the secrets of the light that shone before the first week of creation. Reveal the secrets of the light that shone before the first week of creation. And when you go to CERN, as I did this past summer, you go down this elevator about 30 stories underground, and you open up, and here's this sign for the Atlas experiment, which is the experiment that's actually looking for the God particle. And you're greeted by this sign for the Atlas detector, and what it says, it gives their mission statement. And their mission statement is to recreate the conditions that existed just after the Big Bang, which is exactly the same as what the Jewish legend was saying that the Christ or Messiah would do. And so I started looking at this as like, wait a minute, okay, this is the God particle we're looking for here. It's the secrets of creation. If we can gather these secrets together and understand this, we're no longer in kindergarten, cosmically speaking. This could represent our graduation into first grade.
It's almost this confluence of, while we are becoming more connected to our spirituality, this technology is appearing that is actually echoing our truth and our, you know, you're speaking to the seed, which is, I'm assuming, the divine spark.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Isn't that amazing that here we are looking for something called the God particle, and we're talking about divine sparks within us? When I left the Atlas detector there and started walking around the campus there at CERN, I was looking for religious imagery, and there wasn't a whole lot. They have Shiva, the Lord of the Dance, is the only religious statue that's there. It was a gift from the nation of India. But then I found this amazing logo. CERN uses a dove with the symbol of the God particle coming out of its mouth. And the dove, they say, it, of course, is the symbol for peace. CERN was founded after World War II. The European researchers noted that after World War II, a lot of the Nazi scientists were rounded up and taken to the United States. And the Europeans knew that if the Nazi high-energy particle physics researchers were involved in research, they were going to weaponize whatever the results of their research was going to be. And so the Europeans got together and decided they were going to create this lab at in Geneva that would be devoted purely to peaceful purposes.
Wonderful.
Okay. And so they use the dove now as part of one of their symbols. So they've got the dove with the symbol of the God particle coming out of its mouth. But the dove, as we know, is also the Christian symbol for the Holy Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is just absolutely amazing to me, the implications of this research, that what they're going to be creating there potentially is literally a secret of peace.
And I did check out on their website, you know, the date that they now have for when they'd start that is May in 2008.
Right.
So how interesting. Just check to see where you are, people, at that point. By then, you'll all have this incredible knowingness.
I think so, too.
Yeah. I really do see a very positive thing. But, no, again, there are some that won't make it, I'm assuming, too. What do you think about that?
Through the ascension process?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, it's an unfortunate, or let's not say unfortunate, it's just an aspect of it. The analogy that people frequently use is that of the lotus, that not all lotuses bloom, and the lotus only blossoms after having worked its way through a whole bunch of crap, right?
Yeah, I thought we did that for the last 26,000 years.
Right, exactly.
It's now time to graduate and
it's
get off
It's now time
that.
To graduate, and it's time to just blossom, and it's what we need are the targets, people to light our candles. I mean, it's as if we've all been going around. None of our elevators go to the top. We've all got this candle inside of us, but it's not lit. And but what happens is that as soon as we start learning how to get that elevator to go to the top, we're all going to be able to do that.
And again, the beauty is that we were given these bodies that just, you know, they can work magic. And you mention the Anunnakis and as being specifically Enki, who was a creator god, who gave us this blessed body that we need to make the shift. So, and that there was Enlil, who was opposed to that.
Right.
You know, so that we still have this, like, war going on between the two of them.
Without a doubt.
Yeah, interesting. Boy. So you see down the road that it's positive.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that we're going to see even more intervention, especially from the spiritual realm, and you know, even technologies coming along that we'll be able to use through this process. I think we're going to see a lot of that start coming online too.
Why don't you explain what you mean by rod and ring? We have a little bit more time. We have about 5 minutes.
Okay.
Explain whatever you want at this point, William.
Well, yeah, I have a DVD called Lost Secrets of Jesus: The Rod and the Ring. And the reason I chose that title is I have a favorite image of Jesus. It's from the 4th century. It was made by Egyptian Christians. And I like the Egyptian Christians because so much of Christian imagery and symbolism came from Egypt originally. And what this painting portrays is Jesus on a white horse. He holds a rod in one hand and a ring in his other hand. The rod was his most common symbol of power for the first few centuries until after the time of the Council of Nicaea. The catacombs of Rome are loaded with images of Jesus performing his miracles with a rod in his hand, raising Lazarus, water into wine, loaves into fishes. He was always portrayed with this magician's rod in his hand.
A wand.
Mm-hmm.
How nice.
And then he's shown with this ring as well. And that ring, as I started researching it, I went back to, I found the definition of it in the hands of Ahura Mazda, who's the Iranian god of light. And they call that ring the Ring of Cosmic Sovereignty. The Ring of Cosmic Sovereignty. So what it tells me is that Jesus was one of these cosmically sovereign beings. He was a star walker. He could go, be, see, do anything he wanted, anytime, any place. And isn't it interesting that today we have these giant particle accelerators that are searching for the secrets of the God particle? There's one at Stanford they call the Linear Accelerator. It's a rod. The one at CERN is a 17-mile round ring. Mm. The rod and the ring. And it tells me that these were probably some kind of magical technologies or symbols for a magical technology that enabled him to manipulate the forces of the universe.
Mm-hmm. So, and it is possible to become immortal through that.
Yes.
How interesting. So, well, I'll see you in the next dimension.
Okay.
And I'll see you in my dreams. How's that?
That'll work.
We can do our own little sliding. Remember the show called The Sliders?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Such profound shows that we've had. And it is important to understand that as the soul starts its interdimensional travel, to watch for the different energies and spirits that are both positive and negative,
mm-hmm.
to put it. Would you, we have how many minutes? We have 3 minutes. What would you like to add that needs to be said?
Gosh, it's just the time to focus. It's time to get your heart and your mind set on these images of ascension, because this is the next step. We're being offered a tremendous opportunity here to blossom as souls. And whether you go to my site and go to the Transfiguration Gallery and utilize those images or other images, just do your very best to stay away from images of suffering and cruelty and focus on those images of love and higher aspiration and even, indeed ascension.
And see that as often and through our dream state as well. See the that manifesting.
Yeah, and you know, movies that inspire me. You mentioned movies a moment ago. What Dreams May Come, that Robin Williams movie, is something that everybody should use as a primer right now, because that is so keyed to the imagination and the fact that our imagination is going to be what will create the next life for us.
Yes. And, well, you are have been such a pleasure, and, you know, I could do this all night, and maybe we'll have you back.
Anytime.
Yeah, and an update on our progress. And, again, that's William Henry has been our guest on Cariel's HeartLink, and his website is williamhenry.net. So, again, it's time for thinking about holiday gifts, and I highly recommend Star Walkers and the Dimension of the Blessed, the wonderful DVD version, and the Light Body Effect in DVD as well. And thank you again, William. And I'm going to just take a moment to mention my next week. I'm having a very special program, and normally I do a program every other week, but we're putting in this next week, same time, 4 o'clock on Wednesday, Barbara Hand Clow.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah, she's wonderful.
I love it.
And she'll speak more to the mind codes. So thank you for listening, everyone, and have a great evening. Bye-bye.